Welcome to the acclaimed podcast, Deep Dive with Andy and the White Whale.
And welcome to the Deep Dive. We are here today to handicap the U.S. Open of Golf. The second major is already upon us. It is Father's Day weekend. If you didn't know that already, make sure to call your dad on Sunday. Hopefully he'll be taking a nap on the couch, watching the U.S. Open come into the making the final turn. And there is a lot of drama in the world of golf this year, and this promises to be another extremely competitive tournament. So I am looking forward to this, and I will be spraying some capital across the board here to try to hit an outright winner and scoop some units here on these matchups. Andy with us as always, today we have a special guest, one of our tennis friends who happens to be a spectacular golf handicapper, the one and only James, who you can find on Twitter at JMAZZJD, joins us to get down and dirty on the golf tournaments. If you go to James's Twitter landing page and scroll through some of the results, you will see someone who has been absolutely killing it on the green stuff all spring long. I can't count the number of times I've seen you come through with just outrageous outright winners. I think you hit an 80-1 at one point. I'll ask you some more questions about this in a second, but without further ado, welcome to the Deep Dive, James.
What's going on, guys? How we doing?
Oh, fantastic. World Cup going on this weekend, U.S. Open going on this weekend. It's grass tennis season. So just the fact that NBA and NHL are in the rearview mirror is absolutely no problem, because the there's so much to do in handicapping. It's incredible right now.
I know this up on us, this whole U.S. Open, because we went straight from balls deep in the French Open, and then all we could talk about was the World Cup coming up, and then, oh, damn, there's a golf major right up in our grill here.
So, James, is the U.S. Open among your favorite of the golf tournaments, or how does this stack up?
You know, Augusta is obviously the granddaddy of them all, right? You know, the Masters, same course. We all know it. We all love it. But this is the clear second. There's not even a close competitor. You have the British, but it's so, you know, I'm a West Coast guy, so I have to be up at 2 a.m. to try and watch it. That's not happening. You know, with the U.S. Open, you get a different course every year. You get a different challenge, especially in trying to do what we're going to do, is trying to figure out who the hell is going to win this thing, right? And so, and it's the best field. It's the best field of any tournament of the year. It's 140 players. You know, you got guys who are major winners having to go through qualifying to get into it. So, you know, it's something that it's the best field, it's the best golfers, and hopefully, you know, they put on a show this weekend for us, you know.
Absolutely. I hit a lucky outright on Koepka last year. I think he was about 40-1 or in that range.
Beautiful.
Fancied myself. I thought I was very good at this. I got one winner, and I was like, oh, I should do this for a living. This is easy. I didn't hit another outright all year long, but it was still a hell of a lot of fun, because it was such a huge number. And I mean, that's really the draw, I think, right? Like, if you're getting into golf handicapping, you're looking for the big payday, because even the favorites in here, we're looking at 8-1 for DJ, 10-15-1 for some of these other guys who are really well-known names. You know, if you can get a winner in this tournament, you are taking home a healthy paycheck.
You're absolutely right. But, you know, as awesome as that is, that's actually a downfall of most golf handicappers, in my opinion. People who want to try and do it, you know, the one-offs, right? You know, you're throwing a unit at maybe four guys, and, you know, you're four units down, and those guys didn't even make the cut, right? Or you know, you're hitting one a year, but if you're betting every single one of them, you're not going to win.
You know, right.
I don't care how much Koepka pays you. If you're betting every single, you know, tournament with that same strategy, you know, your bankroll's dead. So yeah, that was something that I had to learn. And we're going to get into it a little bit, I guess. So, you know, but that's it's a blessing and a curse, right?
It's okay. Almost like the worst thing is to hit an outright. Like, I remember, what year is it, 28? I hit the – I don't bet golf all that much. I bet the majors and just wild hair. I might have tailed somebody, but it was the 2017 – it was right before the Super Bowl with the Patriots and the Falcons. So I want to say it was Waste Management. And okay. I ended up, it was one of the Asian players. I think it was Matsuyama.
He owned that tournament.
I hit the outright on him. And it was great because then I took all that money and piled it into the Patriots like second half. And that turned out, it was an awesome day. So then, without having a ton of golf knowledge or much preparation, I promptly bet like 7 or 8 outrights on like the next 3 tournaments and just, like you said,
like lost your ass.
There's like 7 guys that didn't make the cut.
Yeah, it's brutal. It really is.
You had a big outright this season. What was your happiest moment in betting golf so far in 2018?
So, you know, I mean, so I hit Webb at the Players 80-1. Wise at the Byron was 34-1, and then I hit DeChambeau at Jack's Place at I think 55-1. So those, you know, the Webb one was great. It was no sweat. The Wise one I liked because it was a little under the radar. I think he was super high. Yeah,
I think most of our listeners, I don't even know if they've heard of a guy named Wise playing golf.
Aaron Wise. I mean, the problem is he's an Oregon guy. I'm a Washington guy. And so it's like it pained me to even put a cent on him because I just hate Oregon so much. It obviously worked out. You know, if he didn't win, I probably would never bet him again because you get guys like that. You're just like, I'm done with you for the rest of your life, right? But, you know, it's been great. Again, like we were talking about before we started this thing, I mean, there's a chance in all reality that I'm done for the year, right? And so my 3 just came in a bundle rather than over the course of, you know, the 12 months that is the season of golf, you know?
Of course.
So how many tournaments have you bet on this year? Like all of them? What does that come to?
So, you know, like one of the things that, yeah, you know, no, way more than that. But I will tell you, and I have to get
halfway through the year.
And it goes all year. That's the thing. There's a swing season that like only the shitty players play in because all the good guys are like taking it off after the tour championship. And so I hit Cantlay in that. But you know, that was a little, that was in like, I don't know, November or something. But you know, the thing is I've been really tinkering and toying with the staking strategy because of kind of what we talked about earlier. You know, you can really lose your ass quick if you don't start hitting these things. And so I have to give all credit where credit is due to the community. I just, you know, I copied Cheat and Steal with the best of them. You know, this isn't high school. I can do that, right? And so, you know, I basically look at what other people are doing and what they do successfully and kind of apply it to my own methods and my own aggressiveness, I guess. And that's kind of where since I've started that staking system is when all this kind of, you know, kind of starts snowballing more or less.
I love it. That's a worthy advice for anyone listening, to be honest.
I have seen that on yours and other golf cappers, and you start looking and, you know, it's a mental thing too when you're used to, you know, you're betting, let's say baseball, basketball, just one game, one-off bets like that, and you're betting a full unit, and you look at that and like, oh man, he's betting a tenth of a unit on this, you got to start looking at, well, you know, he's got like 7 units outlaid on this, this tournament right now throughout like 35 bets. And if that, you know, 2/10 of a unit bet hits, it's at 40-1.
Pays for everything.
Andy, you're
still
totally
gotta,
right.
And you still got to look at stuff like that.
You know, and I'll even the way, you know, I'm not a math guy. Like I'm more of a logic guy. I have a law degree. And so like the math stuff, I let Whale deal with that, you know, like he can do spreadsheets and I'm more of like a logic guy. So when I look at it, like a 4-day tournament, if I hit an outright, that's going to be about 8 units, right? So if I bet, and I bet baseball as well. So if I bet baseball and I bet baseball for 4 days and after 4 days, I'm up 8 units. I mean, I'm pretty damn excited, right? Same thing with the NFL Sunday or college, you know, any week, any 4-day span, if you're up 8 units, you're excited. So instead of staking and trying to win 33, which is just obnoxious, right? I kind of just, you know, was like, well, why am I being so greedy here? Like, you can just hit sixes and only lose one unit, right, if you don't hit one. And sure, it could be more long-term and sustainable. And so, you know, that really was a turning point for me, because I was able to get more exposure. And if your model's right, that means you probably, if you're going to hit an outright, that means your model is probably right. So then those head-to-head matchups and the first round leaders in the top 10, those should also pile on if you can get the model right.
That's interesting. So you don't necessarily try to spread your risk. You're literally like, okay, this is my angle coming into this. This is the way I think this course is going to play. Because of that, these players pop in my model, and therefore I'm just going to go with all of it. My research is right and done, and this is, you know, we're not going to try to hit, you know, we're not going to try to hit this from various angles in case I'm wrong about X, Y, or Z.
Mm-mm. No.
Okay.
So, cool. I mean,
you gotta trust the model.
And that's the thing. It's like, and you're, if anyone, you're the poster boy for that, right? You post your model on Twitter every day. And so, like, that's kind of, you know, honestly, that's an influence, right? And so you look at it, and it's, for me, the course, the every course is different. And I'm a golfer too. So, I mean, I love golf. I play golf multiple times a week. So, you know, it's like, so for me, I enjoy it. So I just do research. I figure out what the course layout is, how the past winners have done, what guys who are successful at that course in the past have done, and most importantly, how well they have done recently, because I'm a huge believer in current form. It's about 60% of my model is just how well have you done the last 12 rounds, the last 24 rounds, the last 40, wow, last 50 good rounds.
And to me, that kind of sounds like, you know, almost like when you talk to a DFS guy, mm-hmm, and they play the, you know, just the half and halves, where if you win, you know, if 50-50. You're in the top half, the 50-50, yeah, thank you, because it's half and half. That's
what I fucking thought. But, you clearly know, I'm a degenerate. Yeah. I know everything. But what, yeah, do you guys want to gamble?
You know, those guys, they play a bunch of 50-50s and whatnot, double ups, and then a few tournaments. And it's mm-hmm the same kind of thing. You're playing your matchups as, you know, the low risk, lower reward to kind of,
yep,
just keep yourself afloat. But then you try to do that, and it covers you on the, yep, on the big, on the big bets,
the lotto tickets.
Yeah, yeah. And if you hit, you know, a 30, 40, 50 to one, that's like hitting your tournament.
Andy, that's 100%. Right. And so, you know, those head to heads, I play a unit, you know, I will always play a full unit on those. No different than I look at it like a baseball game, right? If I'm going to bet, you know, 9 units over the 3 day or the 4 days on a baseball game, and I think I have an edge, why am I not going to do that on a head-to-head golf match, right? So if I find 12 like this, I'm going to have a shit ton this week, because there's a million matchups, and I'll be able, in my opinion, I trust the model.
You
right?
could really dig, yeah.
I'm glad but, I didn't, you know, talk be- to you before the Masters, though, cause, because you might have 3 outrights, but I have 1. And that's the I'm a bet 1,000, so literally I've only bet 1 golf tournament this year, I think. And
we're gonna put Danny on the spot big time later.
Hit Fatty Penny Reed, and it's not like I didn't take 5 other guys, right? I went too big on those futures. I'm like, oh shit, I shouldn't have done that. And then I should have. That was right.
I'll tell you what, I have a quick little story about that. My buddy, one of my best friends in the world, he had Justin Thomas. He bets like 3 guys for just the majors, probably just like everybody else does, right? And sure. So he had Justin Thomas, and he had Pat Reed, these last 2. And so I'm telling him all my accolades. I'm like, yeah, I hit 3 straight. He's like, dude, I'm 2 for 2. Leave me alone. Like, what are you? Like, I'm the best. I'm way better than you. He's like, you just have more time. I'm like, okay, bud. All right, you know. So that's how it works.
Well, he's going to go on tilt one of these times. So what? Let me ask you what you split your outlay then between outrights, between – let me put it in 3 categories. Okay. Outrights, full tournament matchups, and then as you go round by round matchup.
Okay, so outrights, I want to invest anywhere between 1 to 2 units only.
Okay.
And so, however, I have to divvy that up. And my goal is to make 8 units per win. So if I hit someone, it should be 8. You know, if I'm not feeling super confident, like Wise, when I hit Wise, it was only like 5.5 because it was just kind of a weird tournament. I didn't really have a good feel for it, in my opinion. Obviously, hindsight 2020, but So my goal is to invest anywhere from 1 to 2 units in outrights. And I mean, honestly, if 1 to 2 units lose, like, whatever, right? I mean, it's just 1 to 2 units. Who cares?
Sure, you know? Sure. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. And so then with the head to heads, like I said, if I have 30, I mean, which is impossible, but if I see an edge, is if you just pull the trigger. I don't really have I don't have a number. And then in terms of the round to round, I hate round to rounds. I hate.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because the thing is I feel like what happens is you take too much stock in one round, and it's such a small sample size. Like, who cares? Like, I would, like, for instance, I played in a 1 week span. I shot 86 and 73, right, in a 1 week span. So, I mean, these guys are complete. I mean, they're erratic as well, right? So if a guy shot something, one, you know, shot 78, you know, everyone's like, well, he's going to bounce back. Well, it's an 18-hole sample. Like, it's so small. How can you draw anything from that for the next round? So you'll see that my rounds are small, but what I will do is I'll take the first round bets are bigger, but when the second, third, and fourth, I mean, I would just be betting the same things over and over again because I would rely on my model, and I don't want to. And that's weird to keep doubling up. Does that make sense?
Oh, no, it does make sense. I kind of come at it a totally different angle, and I'm interested in your take on this. So I really only bet the majors. I'm not out here grinding week in, week out, which makes it a lot tougher to kind of sustain winning. And I'll admit that I'm up front. Like, no, I'm not a good golf handicapper by any stretch of the imagination. but when it comes to the full tournament head-to-heads, I guess probably because I'm not operating from a place where I have an informed model, I'm not, like, really swinging hard until I kind of get to see the guys play the course and see how they play the course. And I try to, I try to kind of look at, okay, well, this was the expectations. You know, the market's fairly efficient heading into this. These were the expectations of these players heading into this. These guys massively underperformed. These guys massively overperformed. And, oh, what do you know? There's a guy who overperformed matched up against a guy who underperformed on round two. You know, and then there are a couple of statistics I like to look at from round one, like guys who are, like, making particularly long putts. You know, like, if you're making more longer putts than you normally do on tour, then I'm dying to fade you on your next round in some sort of matchup. And and that's been relatively successful. It's definitely, there's no guarantee, but I feel like you can kind of tease out an advantage there. And I do think the market kind of tends to run in the direction of, like, oh man, this guy shot 500 and he's matched up against a guy who's 2 over. Like, he's going to beat the hell out of him today, you know?
Yeah.
And there's some overcorrections and some overreactions on that. And I feel like at the end of the day, guys are going to regress to their mean. And at the end of the day, you're not going to fall that far away from what your expectation was, or you're going to fall somewhere near your expectation pre-tournament.
And honestly, that is perfect. I mean, I do make plays based on second, third, and fourth rounds, and that is the exact mentality that I use as well. The only difference is if it doesn't match up with my model, then I won't pull the trigger. So I'll have a lot less.
Got it.
Does that make sense?
Got it.
Yeah.
Yes. So, like, absolutely.
And I look at that. I mean, when I go to the matches, the very first thing I do is I scroll, and I have a Fantasy National. If anyone is a golf fan, wants to cap it, and you want to create a model, I mean, it's $10 a month. I've made plenty. that $10 over the last 2 months has been paid out, you know, easily, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a great, great service. I'm not being paid or anything by these guys. It's just a great deal. And so what they do is they allow you to just to sort the entire field by strokes gained, whatever you want. And so after the first round, I'll go in and I'll just, you know, sort strokes gained putting. Oh, this guy made every putt. I want to fade him. But then if I go to my model and my model says the guy he's matched up with is not a fade, then I'm not going to do it. Does that make sense?
No, of course. Yeah. So basically I'm saying, like, okay, there's some, you know, broader trend here, some regression to the mean that would tip up certain way. And you're saying, well, it's not actually, it may not be regression to the mean. It may be that it's actually, you know, it's actually explainable given the way that you've kind of set up your understanding of the player and the course and all that sort of thing. And so you can kind of screen out losers, basically.
Right. And that's the thing. to take it even further, guys, in my model, I don't have a putting stat at all. I'll never have a putting stat in my model because on a week-to-week basis, there are so few guys who can actually outperform the field in putting because it's just a streaky thing. Like, you guys have played golf, right? I mean, everyone sure. at least teed it up a little bit. I mean, how often, you know, and if you're even if you're a weekend warrior or you're a, you know, 4 handicap, how often do you just burn the edge on a putt? And you're like, oh my God, it was so close. Right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, sure.
Well, yeah, my putter, that's the club I use the most. I'm probably I'm using that, you know, everything else is, you know, right? once a hole. I'm using that 3-4 times a hole sometimes.
And how many of and some of them are probably, you know, right off the edge. And that's thing. And these it's no different from these guys. These guys are not, you know, there are very few guys who can actually make those putt consistently. Jason Day being one of them, we'll get into it. But, you know, if you look at the top, and I'm trying to pull it up here, if you look at the strokes gained putting guys, there are a bunch of guys that you would have no interest in. You probably wouldn't even know because they're just shitty players.
Interesting. So this is – okay, so – oh, man. I'm excited talking about this because this is kind of new territory for me, so this is fun. But let me ask you, are you nervous at all not having
– the crossing off. I like that too. It's just like every other sport. When you're going through a card –
Yeah,
I mean, there's just stuff you got to cross off right away to start whittling things down.
Let me ask you specifically about this course and about the U.S. Open in general. Are you nervous at all not having putting accounted for specifically, given that this, I mean, this is going to be potentially, that might be the most important part of this course and attack?
No, I'm not. Not even remotely. Okay. And I can, and I'm even more in a belief when you look at the last player who won this thing. Retief Goosen won in 2004, and he got – I mean, he made everything. You looked at a 15-footer, he could kick it in. It was ridiculous. But that's not sustainable. That's not real. That you can't – you see what I'm saying? Like, you can't – that's not something you can cap. That's just you know, you get streaky for – you know, I mean, again, I play, and so, like, there's days where I play, and I'm just, like, I'm making everything I look at. And there's days where I play, and I'm, like, shaking over putts, right? And so, you know, it's like, and that's, you know, obviously not to the extreme, but I think that these are all professionals and there are all, the difference between the best putter and the worst putter is not enough that I can actually figure out on a week to week basis.
I like it. Let's talk about the course a little bit then. You brought it up. This is not the first time they've played at Shinnecock Hills. The 2004 U.S. Open was here. Retief Goosen won by 2 strokes over Phil Mickelson. I remember that. Retief Goosen was a good, fun guy to cheer for. He was a good South African player back in the day. For those of you who are not as old as myself, but this is, they've had a number of U.S. Opens here. '95 they had 96. Corey Pavin won over Greg Norman. Who else do we have?
James Raymond Floyd.
Back in 96. Who won in 96? I can't remember.
No. It was 70. Raymond Floyd won it in 76. No, 86, I believe. No, James 85. Fowler. I don't know.
What? Andy's playing a trick on you because he's referring to 1896.
I hate to cut you off, but this is actually the first incorporated golf course in the United States, so they were definitely playing on those courts back then. Just to let you know.
Incredible! It was the second ever U.S. Open they hosted here in 1896. Scottish fella.
Yeah, he shot a 152 that weekend. I don't think
he went low.
They wouldn't even be close to that.
He went low. That's
he went low.
He went very low.
Nowadays the course is a lot longer. It's about
they would go out and like go to the tree and just cut it off and just start whacking it with it. Like they wouldn't even.
Yeah.
It wasn't even golf clubs. They didn't even give a shit.
You won $150 for winning it. I'm dead serious.
Which is like a million with inflation, right?
Yeah. The winner's share this year is like 2.1, I think.
$150. Unbelievable. A free haircut?
I'm just saying, like a horse or something? Like what?
Oh, he got a horseback ride back into the city. this is out on Long Island, out in the Hamptons, bougie country club type of atmosphere. You know, I'm sure the rich and famous from New York will all be out there watching golf this weekend. The course itself is 7,500 yards long now. It's longer than it was previously. You'll probably hear this mentioned a billion times in the broadcast, but they've added 500 yards-ish to the length of the course since the last time it hosted, while still keeping it a par 70. That is going to be difficult, or is this, you know, I guess knowing nothing else, what kind of final score are we going to see with the winner here?
Well, I will add one thing. I will say that the fairways are wider than they were back in the day, right? And so the course underwent, just to add on a couple things, course underwent a redesign like 2004, I believe, from a couple guys, Ben Crenshaw, a good putter. And what they did was they widened the fairways to where you could like park Learjets on them. And when they saw the debacle of Erin Hills, they filled them back in to a certain extent, but not to the point where they were prior. And so you're looking at like, I've read different numbers, whatever, 40 yard wide fairways compared to when Pavin was hitting seven woods, which is just ridiculous. But, and Goosen was, there was, it was more like a 26 yards wide.
Wow.
So, which is a huge deal for me and what I'm looking at. I don't think you can take those courses because they've also done the things around the green where they've shaved all the rough around the green off. And so you're going to see just tight lies where guys are going to be able to putt. And they're going to have to, you know, clip it real clean. The rough around the greens isn't thick. And so it's going to allow the short game guys to be able to get real creative, I think. And so, you know, you gotta factor those things in, and that comes from, you know, just reading all these Golf Digest and all the Twitter guys who everybody knows. Sure. So, yeah,
I love it. Did
what did we decide par was? 70?
70, yeah.
So I'm just looking at five dimes, and I mean, I'm gonna start with last year. The what Koepka? I'm terrible at this guy's name. What did Brooks shoot?
He was 16 under. Yeah,
16 under. And
this was a debacle.
The five dimes.
I loved it.
they have some alternate lines, but they have basically, this is your chalk line here is over under 275 and a half strokes. So they're basically setting the winner at 4 or 5 under for the tournament.
Yeah, I guess so.
280.
Well. If we can go back in history just a little bit more, guys, before we move on?
Yeah.
So the problem is that in 04, it was a fucking nightmare. And I'm sorry for cussing. I don't know if that's okay.
No worries, man.
I mean, it was like, it was a complete nightmare.
Get the kids out of the room.
Yeah, move them. Dude, they're totally asleep. What are you talking about? It's like almost a midnight there. Come on. Anyways, So just to give you an example of what kind of disaster it was on Sunday, the average score, not the worst, the average score on Sunday was 79.
Oh my God!
Jeez. Yeah, think about that. Nine over was that tournament average. So what happened? They got wind, they had heat, you couldn't hit the ball on the green and have it stay. Like it would bound over, and so guys were just making huge numbers. It was just unfair. And that's actually why it hasn't been back recently. Because the members were like, fuck you, USGA. You screwed this golf course up. We hate you. And they're like, you can't have us back.
I was wondering. I'd heard, just did a little research here. I'd heard that the same things you're saying from 04 were the greens were like linoleum floors. Just everything was sliding right across and out. And the fairways were too skinny. And Goosen won with a 4 under. In 95, yeah. Pavin won with an even par.
Yeah, and Pavin was hitting seven woods, like 220 yards. He's the shortest hitter maybe ever to actually win tournaments. And so, like, you know, that was how the course was set up then. And they knew that it wasn't – because the problem is the USGA gets all these courses, and they just – it's almost like they don't follow or watch golf, which is just obnoxious. Like, they don't do anything right. They just screw everything up. And so the biggest thing about this tournament is that they've fucked up the last two. And so Erin Hills and Chambers Bay were basically disasters. And so they have to get this right. And so my guess
they shouldn't have them on the West Coast first off.
You're crazy. Oh. That's crazy. It's so much better on the West Coast where they play late.
You skipped over Oakmont anyway.
Hey, we're going to Pebble next year, so get ready for that, okay?
I guess that was my question as far as this course played tough. It played high scores the last couple, and it, you know, obviously it's been a long time. They made it longer, but they made the fairways wider. They know what they did wrong last time. And then also, it might be 500 yards longer, but guys are hitting the ball. There's a lot of long hitters right now, and it's not 2004. What do you think of this 275.5?
Can somebody
shoot 500?
Yes, absolutely. I, in my opinion, this golf course is going to play a lot easier than what we've seen. And the problem is with betting that is that you are relying upon the weather.
Sure.
I've also heard it might be a windy weekend.
And so if you get 20 mile an hour winds, they're not going to be able to. It's going to be real difficult to shoot that because they're hitting long irons into these greens. I mean, for example, last year someone posted a stat on Twitter. I think it was Bucks, who's a great follow. If anyone who's not following him, you got to do it. He posted a stat on Twitter that Dustin Johnson didn't hit less than a 7-iron into a green all of last year on tour. And so, mind you, he hits a 7-iron like, you know, 190, 200, but that's just insane. And he came out today in his press conference and he's like, I'm hitting clubs into these greens that I've never hit before.
Oh boy.
And so that's, you know, and if he's hitting clubs he's never hit before, that means, you know, everyone else, he's like a 2 club on most guys, right? On like the average guy. So, you know, his 7-iron is a 5-iron, which is a huge difference, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, if it's windy, then it'll get attacked. But the thing is these guys drive the ball so damn far and so damn straight. And if you have a wide fairways, in my opinion, I think that the Bombers can take advantage of it and go well.
Cool.
Because
cool.
I love these. I always seem to
I do too.
On a 72 hole over under, or I actually went pretty heavy on the Masters on the under 60. I think it was 65.5. I needed like 65, and boy, the first 2 days we almost had it. 2 people biffed it on 18 for me, and finally we got that one through. So I will probably have some ticklers on those.
I love it.
So I'm looking at the weather right now, and Thursday's 14, Friday's 12, 10-10. Like that's nothing for these guys. That's just not really that big of a deal. But I've also heard that you don't this area of the world, which I've never been to, you don't the weather, you throw it out the door. Like these guys shouldn't even have jobs, that kind of stuff, you know. So
I love it. Let's talk about I think that's a really good setup of the course. I've already learned a ton. And I cannot wait for this to start.
I've got all my outrights figured out now.
I've tweaked my model. I'm ready to go. Let me kind of get a feel for the current form of some of these guys that are sitting at the top of the outright market board.
Cool.
The current leader in the futures market looks like Dustin Johnson. At plus 810. Can you give me a quick synopsis on how he's doing currently?
This is going to be really quick. I'm going to read off his ranking in my model. Are you ready? In the stats that I use. 1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-1-2-1.
Oh, man.
Whoa, what's he second?
Oh.
Yeah, what's...
he's second in...
Ability to walk downstairs?
He's definitely first in doing coke off models' asses. But he's second in form his last 75. He's second. Justin Thomas is first in form in his last 75 rounds.
Interesting. He's coming off a tournament win, right? Has there been any back-to-back winners heading into the US Open?
No. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe. I have no idea. I mean, who knows? It's been around for a while. I don't know if you know that well. Maybe.
in recent years, I don't think there has been.
Not
in
like
the last, but yeah, yeah.
You know, and this is just another theory thing from my perspective. I'll be quick. I don't really believe in this whole you can't go back-to-back thing. It's just hard to win golf tournaments, right?
Right,
so, like,
sure.
The back-to-back, just throw it out. Like, it's just hard to win anyways. Back-to-back doesn't really it doesn't do anything for me. I'm not afraid to take a guy back to back who is 1-1-1-1-1-1-2-1, right? Like, that's seems like a guy you don't want back.
So DJ is the man to beat then.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. How about Justin Rose at 14-1?
Love it. I mean, I bet him. I mean, you want to talk about form. I mean, he's top five in everything I just told you. So coming off a win, you know, since the Masters, come off a win, I think 3 weeks ago at the Fort Worth, I believe. And, yeah, I mean, and he's also a U.S. Open champion, right? And
so, yeah, right. I had heard a cool snippet, actually. He won at Marion, I want to say. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that was like the same course architect or something along those lines? Or there's just some course similarity?
No, Marion's a tree line. No. This course is more like, if you guys have heard of Pinehurst, it's kind of a link style, because this is a link style golf course. No trees, right? And so the wind blows. What the USGA has done and what I've seen over the last 10 years is they want the top guys to win their golf tournament. So in the 90s, it was a bunch of random guys. In the early 2000s, like Matt Jones has won a US Open. Like, who the hell is that, right? Like,
I never.
He is. Of course, right? But if you look back in the US Open winners, there's a lot of randoms. And I think that the USGA actually just made a conscious effort to say, we want the top guys to win these, which can be evidenced by the fact that the last seven winners were all in the world golf ranking top 30. The last seven winners were all top 30 ranked.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, we'll get into my bets, but I mean, I'm heavy with these guys because it just seems like the USGA wants the best guys to shine because they probably know that's what, you know, who wants a Sunday showdown between Corey Connors and Russell Knox?
Yeah, I mean, I was sweating hard when what was that guy's name last year who kind of came out of the woodwork? Harmon?
Fleetwood.
Fleetwood too. Yeah, Fleetwood. Fleetwood, I think, has stuck around. He's got the chops. Harmon came out of nowhere. I felt like, at least, I had never seen the guy play.
He's a good player
for a while. He's a good player. Yeah, but he gave Koepka a heavy duty run. How about you mentioned Justin Thomas is at the top of one of your rankings, best over the last 75. How is his price looking at 14-50?
You know, I released my card through my Twitter handle. The problem is like I don't lay these prices with these guys.
Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, like I just ultimately long term, I don't think you can win laying 14-50s. And, you know, it's not real. So what I do is I parlay with some baseball players. And they hit. Yeah. And so they hit, luckily. So I have JT at 37-1.
Okay, cool.
Because I parlayed them with, so that's my strategy with these top guys. And if you look at my cards, I don't do it often because I you know, normally there's just no value in them. And like for instance, last week DJ was number one in my model. It wasn't even close. And he's always number one, right? So it's like, like, what are you gonna do? Bet him every time? No, because you know he's not winning every time. So he was number one in my model. I didn't bet him. I didn't parlay him. I lost, unfortunately. But you know, so this is like the rare instance. Because I have a strong belief that the winner's gonna come from the top somewhere. So then I'll get creative, you know, find guys, let you do whatever you want.
Is there a bundle? Did you look in the props on Five Dimes and see if they bundle those three?
There's
DJ, is there a DJ Rose Thomas? I don't see DJ Rose Thomas. Oh, damn it.
Really?
No, they're screwing us. Yeah. There's no DJ Rose Thomas. There's a DJ Rose Day. Yeah, there's a DJ Rose and a Thomas Rose. Okay. I'm probably going to go that way, at least for maybe a little bit larger than, you know, a couple than 0.1 or 0.2. Just have it in the queue. Okay. I like what you have to say about the top three guys. I had kind of written off Rory. I don't know. I don't have a strong feeling for what his form is like right now, but for whatever reason, I just, I haven't heard enough buzz. Haven't really gotten a feel that he's, you know, in this tournament to win it. Is that a fair read?
You know, totally fair. His form isn't great. He's middling in the 20s. He's my 20th ranked player. So, and I'm a form guy. The only thing with him is that if the wind doesn't blow, he might win without anyone being close to him. because he could, because he hits it so high and he hits it so far that, in my opinion, the wind courses aren't ideal for him. Which I've seen him stroke game wind play and he's been good anyway, but it doesn't make any sense to me because he just hits the ball insanely high and far, and he's one of the best drivers on tour. But I just I'm not liking this form, and at that price, there's just no way.
I'm mad at him anyway because he really screwed up on Sunday at the Masters. So we'll leave him on the bench. Yeah.
I tell you,
he was awful.
Guys, where you're like, yeah, never betting you again, right?
Yeah.
I'm looking at him and just looking way off kilter here from, you know, timeout on the top 10 guys thing. I'm looking at a prop on him making the cut, and that reminds me, and I wish I'd have written this down. So do you remember back when we did the Masters pod and we realized that, like, everybody's going to make the cut?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. So there's, what was it, 156 guys
play this?
And
yeah.
156,
such a good point.
I wrote down 156 players. There's no 10 strokes within the lead thing. It's just 60.
Oh, that shit's stupid.
60 people plus ties make the cut. So,
and you're smart, I mean, dude.
Let's just say there's like 10 people tied at the last spot, which 10's probably a good heavy chunk. Let's say 70 people, like, still less than half the people make the cut. There's got to be some value in some of these don't make the cut props because some of the top guys are 4, 5, 6 to 1.
I love that.
Like,
well,
be some people to pick out that, like, don't make the
cut. Did Rory make the cut last year?
I don't know.
No. He did not.
Did they make the cut last year?
Oh, he was awful. Yeah.
Did DJ make the cut last year?
Did he miss the cut? Really? Yes. They all missed?
Yes.
Oh, man.
They all missed the cut last year. So I'm glad you brought that up.
So if there's somebody market, you don't like, there's some big numbers. Like Fowler is plus 380 to miss the cut. Like, there's some decent-sized numbers to be, you know, I just picked a guy. I'm just looking here. But Spieth.
Yeah, why do you hate Ricky Fowler, man? Andy, why do you hate Ricky Fowler? God.
I'll tell you why.
Bend your goddamn cap.
Shout out to Sam, who loves Ricky Fowler.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Ricky Fowler has been overbacked in so many of these majors. People are so desperate to have a ticket on him when he finally breaks through.
I listen to VSiN every once in a while I'm driving to work, and they had I think the Westgate guy on. I don't know what his name is, but he's like a golf guy. He said most tickets, most money, Ricky Fowler.
I bet you every major besides the Woods.
I've seen some tweets that said that, like, Fowler's taking the most money. It was Fowler and Spieth were both right up there. And,
oh, my God. So I don't get it.
Yeah, if you have five dimes and you have a guy that you think very lowly of.
So let's talk about that then. Let's talk about that. I mean, in my opinion, I mean, I love the no Rory, the no Day. Day's entire game is completely dependent upon him making seven-footers for par. Like, that's what he does. And so you have one bad putting day, and although he's the best putter in the world, but – you know, he's not a good ball striker. He's not a good driver of the ball. He's not. If he gets in trouble on this rough, he's going to make big numbers because everyone will, because the rough is insane. I don't know if you've seen the videos. It's stupid, but
it is.
You know, when you're talking about those guys at the top of the market, you know, like Spieth, the 17th in my model, I get away. See ya. You know, Matsuyama, I don't know if that's out there, but, you know, I'm not into him either. So all you need to do is hit one of those, right?
Yeah. Interesting. Oh, man, it's good stuff to talk about. The not to make the cut market, it might be well worthy given how tight this field is going to be.
You got 140 players, top 60. That's all you need to know.
Just curious, you have any thoughts on the fact that Fowler just got engaged and how that might play into his mental game?
Gosh, man, she's such a smoke show, though. I don't know.
It's crazy.
I don't know. What do you do with that thing? What do you do?
I don't know, man. Sometimes it's been in the back of your mind, like, man, I'm the only guy on tour who's not, I remember that picture from the Ryder Cup of him so clearly. He's the only guy without a wife family. Yeah.
Well,
that was a good picture. Maybe golf, I don't hate him. Golf, that was a funny picture.
Golf wives and golf girlfriends are the hottest of any sport. It's not even close. Have you seen the thing that DeChambeau's banging right now?
No.
Oh,
no.
We digress. But yeah, Google that right now. No, golf girlfriends and golf wives. I mean,
oh, she has a sexiest name.
I'm telling you, man, that she's a dime a dozen on tour. A complete dime a dozen on tour.
Well, yeah, I mean, the only place I was really going with that, though, is that, you know, sometimes when you have, you know, a major life breakthrough like that, like you have a kid or you get married, or you get engaged like that, sometimes like that, your mind, you know, it takes your mind off the game a little bit. And that can be good. Not, you know,
it
not can, always,
and so. That's something he might need, because I'll tell you, a better man than us has lost his whole bankroll betting Ricky for majors, you know. It's been a 5-year thing, and you know, I'll be the guy when he wins one, I'll lose my money, and that's fine. Yeah. I'll be that guy.
Yeah. Okay. I'm in that camp as well. I'm exactly, and especially seeing how overbet he is in some of these spots.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
Everyone loves him. Everyone loves the Puma and the colors. I don't know.
He's got to move off the orange for me. I don't like it at all. The Sunday orange is Sunday creamsicle orange. It's a childish look. He's a grown up now, man. He's got to.
It's his Oklahoma State stuff. It's his Oklahoma State type deal. He's trying to do it.
Okay.
Yeah. Even though it's not Oklahoma State orange at all, but
no, it's like Tennessee Volunteer creamsicle. Yeah. So we blew through some guys there. McIlroy, Day, Fowler, Spieth. Is you got a little choky going on with the putter, right?
I wouldn't bet him with your money.
Is he worth fading in matchups by any chance?
Absolutely. I've already done it. So I've locked in Rahm and Koepka. I think the market's figuring it out, because although Spieth is better than them to win it, they're favorites in the matchup. So
interesting.
I've already bet that. And here's the thing, you know, if you can't make four footers, going to a track that is running a 13 on the stint is not where you learn how to make four footers, in my opinion. So
yeah,
he's dead to me.
Yeah. Okay. John Rahm doesn't have temperament for this course. Is that fair to say?
That's my winner. I love him.
Ah, you like John Rahm. Interesting.
I love him.
Interesting. That's my guy. What is it about his game that suits this course, you figure?
He's one of the best drivers of the golf ball in the entire world. I mean, he's just off the tee, he just gets it done. I mean, he's number two in the last 50. He's number one in the last 36 off the tee. And that's a big stat for me this week, obviously. Where he lacks is actually his approach game. But I think he's just it's a matter of time, right? Like, that guy's gonna win. His talent is unreal. He's eighth in my model. You know, he's priced with Ricky, who I already bet him to just destroy. And I get the temperament thing. I think it's a little overplayed. I don't buy that. I just don't. He's fiery. He's competitive. He wants to win. You know, he's not like all these other guys on tour who are just pussies, you know, and sorry to say, but that's just the way it is. Like, to me, you know, he's like Tiger was a bit, Tiger cussed himself out when he made bad shots, right? No one was like, temperament's not good enough, right? I just don't buy that. I think it's just a matter of time for me. So I'll probably bet him until he wins a major, and maybe I'll go on Ricky Island with him, but this is a really good, in my opinion, this is a really good setup for him, because he's elite off the tee. If he can get the driver in play, and he's an elite putter. And so, you know, if he can put it all together for four rounds without losing his cool, he's my guy to win this tournament. That's not DJ.
I like it. How about any chance for a back-to-back champ here with Koepka at 26-2-1?
I mean, I bet him. I did. I parlayed him. I'm at 31, but – you know, it's hard to go back to back, but it's just hard to win golf tournaments, right?
Of course.
So, but his game sets up so good, and this is actually a theme, right? This is actually a theme. So Dustin Johnson is like your U.S. Open player. Well, what does he do well? He hits it far and he hits it straight.
Yeah.
And that's what do most young players do well? Well, they hit it far and they hit it straight. And I think I think the USGA wants their top guys to win. And so if you hit it far, hit it straight, like, I'm interested in what you got to say, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Who blows out of the guys we've talked about so far? And then I want to talk a little bit about Tiger, a little bit about Phil. But this is really kind of where I see you kind of draw the line here, cream of the crop versus guys who, you know, you're going to go on a little bit more of a reach on. Who blows up this make the cut parlay? Johnson, Rose, Thomas, Rahm, and Koepka.
Why are you going to ask me that? I just told you I loved all of them.
I know. I think they all make the cut, right?
What's that paying out? Can we go plus, to Vegas after that?
Plus, yeah, plus 123 on that. Those five guys make the cut. You're taking home plus 123.
I think Rahm blows that up. He's the most volatile, right?
He's boomer bust.
Outright 10 seconds ago.
Well, he's boomer bust. That makes sense, though. If he's more of a boomer bust guy.
He made me make a decision. So, the other guys are consistent. If everyone's going to blow that, it's going to be Rahm. Because I would be more surprised if he missed the cut, but he has a talent.
And I'm a Rahm guy. He was one of my Masters picks. In fact, I think I just picked guys that had R's in their last name.
I don't like him for the Masters, though, because in the Masters, you got to hit the high hook, and he hit the cut. And so it'll never work that well for that course. But anyways, yeah. And by the way, this course,
he didn't do
got to hit a cut.
I don't think.
No, he's fine. He's well. No, he's great. But I a winner, you have to hit the hook, in my opinion, in Augusta. And so, but on this course, you got to hit the cut.
Interesting. I love this.
And so,
I love this. All right, I'm going to sprinkle some Rahm for sure.
Koepka, like these guys who hit the high cut, and Rory, he has a high draw. That's, you know, I'm not, that just goes back into that, right?
I love this. Let me ask you about Phil. Phil is kind of a sentimental favorite to win the U.S. Open every year. We've seen him finish second place. I can't remember exactly how many times, but I think it's something like 15 or something. Oh, six. Okay. It might as well be infinity. This guy cannot seem to break through the U.S. Open. I've heard people make pretty compelling cases for him here to compete. Something about the way he puts spin on the ball and being able to keep, you know, sit it down on these greens where everyone else is going to be moving all over the place. Is this a bettable angle, or is Phil going to be an also-ran?
You know, here's the thing. If Phil wins, I'll be really mad because he's high in my model, but I did bet him. And it's just, there's other guys I like more and they're better value. But I mean, he's 11th in my model. And so it's not like he's bad. I fully think he can win this golf tournament. I mean, shit, he has a T2 and a T4 here at the same course.
Yeah, that's incredible.
So it's like, it's not, right? I mean, he knows this course and he likes it the way you listened to that, the Shack House pod, and Phil was saying how much he loved it, right? And he was saying how much he's bettable 100%. I didn't bet him and he's probably going to win and I'll be pissed. But I won't be because I love Phil. So it's like one of those things where it's like an emotional hedge, right?
Sure.
Spoiler alert, I did bet him already because I love shit like that.
Do you think
and that would be
I love Sergio winning the other year. I like golf soap opera stories like that. And it would be awesome for him to
get. I just think if he was at 45 instead of 30, I would be all over him.
Yeah, right. That's probably where he should be, you think? Something like that?
I don't know.
Fair price for him?
He has a win this year. He hasn't won since the British Open in like 2012, and then he wins this year. He's got a bunch of wins. He's got like T12, T4. I mean, he's been playing out of his mind, right? But I just – you got to draw the line, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Who finishes with – who finishes higher place between Tiger and Phil? Okay.
Is that available, Andy? Can you tell me what that?
I see matchups with Woods, Koepka, Woods. They have two Woods. These guys are so. Why do they do this? God damn it! Tournament for sure. I see Woods, Koepka, Woods, Stenson, and Woods Matsuyama. I don't see Woods.
Yeah.
So yeah, Woods Spieth and Woods Rahm.
It's because Tiger's 22 and Phil's 30, so they would have to make it like Phil plus 130, and they would just get absolute murdered.
Yeah, that's probably why they didn't hang it. That's a good point. Yeah. Oh, well.
Leading to Tiger, right?
Yeah, so not anywhere near the public fury to back Tiger here at the U.S. Open that we saw at the Masters. What happened with him in the betting markets at the Masters was like the most out of control thing I think I've seen all year. I mean, it was ludicrous.
Maybe
how many people,
sport, right?
Maybe any sport. Sport. Yeah, it was absolutely ludicrous.
He's the betting favorite for a little bit.
It was crazy. It was absolutely insane. Things have cooled off.
If he won.
Yeah. Yes. Those guys were probably sweating a little bit until around the end of day two.
When it
looked
one.
Like he might. Yeah. Right. Even the end of day, into round two, he came close to not making the cut. But things have cooled off substantially in terms of Tiger buzz. Is there any reason to suspect he warms things up and really makes people must tune in to watch this tournament?
So my favorite stat is the last 24 rounds, like form last 24 rounds. I think that is the best example. And obviously I work in the other rounds, right? So it's not like that's like 100%. Usually last 24 rounds is about 30% of my model, something like that, depending upon whether it's that ball, whatever. Last 24 rounds, Tiger is number one in strokes gained approach, number one in strokes gained around the green, and number two in strokes gained tee to green. He's number 79 in strokes gained off the tee, which is why he hasn't won anything, right? And he's number 60 in putting because of that performance he had at Jack's course. And so when it comes to just striking the little white thing, right, he is elite. He's a top five guy in the entire world, right? But he just, for whatever reason, the tee game and the putting, I think that was bullshit. I wouldn't put any stock in the putting thing. As you can, that's the theme of the podcast, obviously, right? But the off the green stuff, he's going to have to find a fairway. If you don't find a fairway in this golf course, you will not be successful.
Okay.
So if he's hitting fairways at a 75% clip, he's going to be right there. If he's hitting them at a 30% clip, he's not making the cut.
Oh, man, interesting. Do you think there's any value in backing a guy like Koepka over him in the head-to-head? Because it looks like there's a
I love that.
Pretty yeah, that. Favorable number here.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, no, I love that. And the thing is, here's one thing I will say, Koepka.
Minus 135 on Koepka, so not bad.
Koepka in my model is 41st, which is kind of stupid, right?
Oh, but that's sure, because but yeah, he's been out.
So right? Bad. And yeah, I mean, his 50 and his 75, 36, his 36, 50, and 75 are just so bad. But he's also third in the last 12, fourth in the last 8, and he is 20th in the last 24. So, you know, that's the thing. You know, you have to just not look at your numbers and bet it. You have to, use some common sense on this stuff, right?
Yeah, right. Andy, did you make a whole hell of a lot of bets?
What if you don't have a golf model?
Huh?
Yeah. No, yeah, my stuff's mostly based on form and guys that I want to win. So
that's a yeah, honestly,
I'm
that's
at,
that's
I'm trying
that's,
to look at my model.
That's a good model.
good way to enjoy the tournament without a doubt.
My model is undefeated this year, but we'll see. I'm gonna put that on the line. I should bet like everybody.
Yeah, Andy, who are you posting? Who's it gonna be?
I don't want to ruin this.
Before I ask James for some long shot thoughts, who you got?
Well, I've already stole.
You got Phil, right?
I got Phil. The two top guys that I bet are Rose and Thomas. I've bet Justin Rose at multiple majors. And
I was all over him at the Masters.
Well, I took Thomas at like 50-1 for the Masters in like December.
He gets a high cut though. It's not gonna work.
And yeah. No, I mean, and this is like last descent, and I felt
good. Oh, that's a good number. Shit.
But yeah, it was a good number, but I mean it didn't pay out very much because he didn't win.
the long number.
I did get a
closing line value is outstanding.
You're like Adam right now.
But yeah, the Oh, what am I lying about? Now I got open 5 dimes, sir. I took a little bit on these are tiny bets because some of these are pretty big numbers. But Emiliano Grillo. Grillo.
Grillo.
125 to 1.
Argentinian.
I might find some top 20 money for him. Paul Casey, who someday is going
he's slipping down the board.
Someday he's going to be good at a major. I don't understand.
Oh, man.
50 to 1 is too much for him. And then a little bit of Tommy Fleetwood. And I might play I might play a little there might be a top Englishman in one of those two. I might flip a coin in those, but hey, I haven't gotten Andy, my props yet.
Real quick, Andy, Grillo is number 4 in my model and Casey's number 5.
Wow. Wow.
Neither of which I bet Grillo. I didn't bet Casey though. I think I can never he'll never he is such a mental midget. There's no
too much of a choke artist.
Oh my god, he's the worst. But yeah, I mean, he fits in my model because he strikes the ball well. He's straight and long off the tee, but there's no way in hell. He won this year because he shot like 62. He's in the clubhouse for like an hour and a half, and no one caught him. That was the only way he could win tournaments.
Wow. Yeah, that was something else. So, James, any other long shots you think worth sprinkling in here that people should check up on before they make their final decisions?
So Grillo is a bet. You know, it's going to be hard to have your first big win in the U.S. Open, but he wouldn't be the first. I like a lot of the Euro guys. I bet Stinson, Fleetwood, Grace, and Norin. Although Grace is not European, he's African. But I like all those guys. And what's that?
I mean, he's kind of Dutch.
It was a colony, yes. But, so that was, long shot, that's kind of it, really. Luke List pops in my model, but he can't make any putts, so I don't – he's not real. Keegan Bradley, same thing. He's the worst putter in the world. Aaron Wise pops. What was that?
I beg to differ on that worst putter in the world thing.
No, you and Luke would have a fun go at it, I'll tell you right now.
I get my money's worth when I go out to the court.
At the Muni. That's awesome. So, yeah, that would be, I think Grillo would be my, if you want to go real long. The thing is, like I said before, 7 straight top 30s, top 30 world ranking guys, right? So, these guys, they try and set this course up to where the best golfers win, and I think they do a good job of it.
I love it. Okay. Anyone that, people haven't heard of that are gonna do you think they'll see on the leaderboard this weekend?
Okay, well, there's this guy who I've never heard of in my life. I've never heard of him, so maybe you haven't. His name is Matthew Southgate, and he's 600 to 1, and he popped 48th in the model. So take that with what you will. He's a Euro guy. He's got some decent stats, but I mean 60. So I bet him top 20, right? And it was 18 to 1 in the top 20. Sneak in there, that would be a guy. Longer
he
shot.
He sounds like a strip mall.
I was gonna say I thought Matthew Southgate. he's well known for his high cut from what I've always heard. So
I guess he might be
that was a good
well known for having a Chipotle in him.
All up inside of him. I bet Gay top 20. And that's really it. The other guys are pretty well known, but I just don't think if a long shot wins this, that's fine. Good for him. I just don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. All right. Cool. Well, let's wrap this up. This was super informative. We kept it right at an hour. So thank you so much for your time. I learned a ton today, and it was exciting and fun to talk about something new in handicapping golf. And
cool.
This was great insight for people. I hope they get a chance to get a good deep dive of the U.S. Open and enjoy your Father's Day weekend with your dad or with your kids watching some golf. And, yeah, best of luck.
Hey, thanks, guys. Have a good weekend, okay?
Last thing, make sure you follow James. Give him a follow. Give him some feedback. Guys, happy to engage people on Twitter. He's running some of the most fantastic golf content you can come across in terms of just, you know, keeping it focused and keeping you on track, finding some winners. So, what is your handle again, James?
I think it's JMattisJD.
Right, you know what you can find it. Find it in the tweet. Yeah, find it in the in the tweet that I put out with the podcast and give them a follow.
We'll link it. Yeah, I was on point all hour, and then you just told me that, and I have no fucking answer for it. So, it's a big Husky logo. Big Husky logo, yeah. And we're in for a big college football season. So get ready for that. Go Dogs!
Yeah, this is like our first 10, 15 episodes when I try to. It's Andy M 568-324-2986. Because I just had a random. For the longest time, I just had a rando.
I'm sorry, I know you're trying to sign off, but Whale, did you see the picture of DeChambeau's lady?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. She is in no danger of drowning. She will not. She will not be drowning. She is not.
He is not a drowning risk. With that thing. He is not winning a thing with that thing in New York. He can't afford her in New York. Are you kidding me? That whole checking one is gone.
And final note: is this a no hole in one kind of place? Because that's what
absolutely.
I want
to go the other way on this one. What's the number?
It's 1.833, what's that, minus 120?
Yeah, minus 125-ish, yeah.
I mean, one of them's 250, so that one's dead, right? And then these greens are going to be, I would say,
250?
I would say no. Oh
my God.
Yeah, 250. What would you hit there? Driver?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a driver, a five.
I don't even wedge, think about
pitching
it.
Pitching wedge, putter.
Exactly. No, yeah, I would say no on that one. I loved your yes at Augusta, by the way. That was a beautiful bet.
Oh, yeah, that was so fun. Sweat. Charlie Hoffman, the guy was the
stud. No.
It was an Asian player, wasn't it?
I thought Hoffman got it. It was definitely Charlie.
Hoffman got it.
Yeah, Charlie got you. Yeah.
All right, boys. Thank you.
Good stuff.
All right, thanks for the time.
All right, James. Best of luck.
Everybody, good luck.
Have an outstanding weekend. Have an outstanding rest of the golf season, and we will catch you on the Twitter.com.
Sounds good. Thank you. Take care, guys.